Because this is a social media conference, and social media is founded on making wild accusations without any proof, I want to accuse Eric of stealing my entire presentation. He's no longer here, but I went over and talked to him, and it's funny the similarities between what I was going to talk about and the way that I wanted to set this up and the way he presented the Denny's story. So at Walmart, we're well known for cutting costs out of everything we do and eliminating redundancies. So I'm not going to repeat a lot of what Eric said, and I'm not going to set up my presentation the same way. So I'm completely winging this. So bear with me. I'm not going to ask you if you've ever heard of Walmart. I'm not going to ask you what your perceptions of our company are, although that's kind of how I'd like to launch into this. So here's what we know about our brand. We've got three rather significant reputational liabilities that Walmart deals with. That we treat our associates poorly, and associates at Walmart is our word for employees, that we buy too much from China, and that we put mom and pop out of business. Who in this room wants to work for that company? I mean, that's an awful company. If I had to get up out of bed every morning and try to screw our associates and try to put mom and pop out of business and go source everything from China, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. That's not the kind of company that we are, but that's the perception that a good percentage of the population has. We are very fortunate to have about two-thirds of the country shop with us every month. That's a pretty good problem to have. What that does mean, though, is there's about a third of the country that doesn't shop with us, and it's for any number of reasons. In a lot of cases, it's because their perception of our reputation doesn't match up with the reality of our company. In reality, we're a mission-based company, and we get up every morning and are obsessed with saving people money so they can live better. Now, who in this room wouldn't want to do that? That's easy to get up out of bed and try to do in the morning. But what we've got to do and what our team is charged with is to make sure that that third of the country who doesn't shop with us, whose decision not to shop with us may be based on something that they think in alignment with those three things that I talked about, that we match up their perception of our reputation with the reality of our company and with the people who we know work at Walmart every day. So why does it matter? It matters because, like everybody else in this room, you're probably trying to grow your business. We are a small retailer from Arkansas, as Ryan pointed out. You may have shopped in one of our stores. You may know somebody who works there. But we still want to grow. We want to be in more markets. We want, you know, legislation in states that restrict us from selling certain items. We want legislation that impacts your ability to collect tax online. We want all of those things to work out in our favor, and you can't do that when the environment against you is unhealthy. So we definitely want to change the environment. We want to change those perceptions of our company to make our business environment more favorable. We also need to retain talent. We have 2.2 million people who work for Walmart around the world. That's a lot of people. We have a lot of turnover in our stores, as you can imagine if you've ever worked in retail or fast food or where there's a lot of churn. So we're constantly hiring people. We need to retain the talent that we have, and we need to recruit new people to work at Walmart. I'm sure when Ryan introduced me, and I'm sure when you found out that somebody was coming to speak from Walmart, you all have a point of view on my company. That's what we're dealing with when we're trying to recruit talent. Not only do you have a point of view on my company, you probably have a point of view on Bentonville, Arkansas. Raise your hand if you've ever been to Bentonville. There we go. It's a pretty cool place now. There are a lot of really cool things that have happened in Northwest Arkansas that make it a very attractive place to work, but we still need to work on the reputation of the company, and that's why it matters. When we think about social media, we also now live in this hot take society, which is not my term. I think I stole that from sports radio. But again, you know, you're allowed to and you're expected in a lot of industries to have a hot take on everything that's going on in society, and there's no accountability for what you say. So I think we've all seen in the last week that Gabby Douglas has gone from hero to villain. For what reason, I'm not exactly sure, but that's what social media can do to people. So we want to be out there with our narrative, again, with our view of what Walmart's like, with that company that we know that we get up every morning to go work for. And so that's why it matters, and that's what we're out there trying to combat. So what did we do? I sit in corporate affairs. I oversee our digital communications team. We do not report up to marketing, so I'm not responsible with selling products every day. Although we did do a pretty big piece on deep-fried Twinkies, that's not what gets me up out of bed in the morning, is I'm not really worried about the product side of things. So We were historically like any other corporate communications or corporate affairs team that you've met, where we oversaw our traditional digital channels, like our corporate website, where it was fairly one-way, if not entirely one-way communication. Here's the press release from the media team, you post it to the corporate website, and we'll all be happy about that. And we really wanted to move into more of a branded newsroom model. This is not unique to Walmart. You've probably heard this 1,000 times at other presentations, but we really needed to become more nimble. We needed to become more adept at storytelling, and we needed to move away from one-way push communications that were updated once a year when we updated our financial records or put out our corporate social responsibility report, and we needed to think more like journalists. So what did that mean for my team? It meant trying to take an existing team of 3 people and grow into a team that could do all of these things for corporate affairs. We really wanted to position ourselves, not only think about being a newsroom, but position ourselves almost as an internal agency of record, so that we could take all of the content needs for corporate affairs, the messaging needs, the platform needs, the social media needs, the paid media needs, the research analytics, all of those needs, and run them through one team. Again, the hope was to eliminate efficiencies, eliminate redundancies, and so it didn't make sense for 6 or 7 different teams inside of corporate affairs to have budgetary control over agency spend on creative, the development of social media handles, the acquisition of audiences. We wanted to run that through one team. So here are the capabilities that we defined as being the most important for us. We wanted to have creative. We wanted to have, really, we wanted to have control over creative, because there wasn't a lot of uniformity around Walmart messaging and Walmart branding, especially in corporate affairs. So much like Denny's was talking about, I thought Walmart had taken an entirely unique approach to this, which apparently we didn't, so I think we stole it from them. We brought our agency in-house. We have our creative director, who is with our agency in LA, embedded with us in Bentonville. I think she lost the bet having to move from LA to Northwest Arkansas, but nonetheless, we've got our agency embedded with us, and I would tell you that they are totally a full partner. We've got a social media agency. We have a research group that we work with. We have some people that help us with messaging, and all of our agencies have been encouraged to communicate with one another independent of me and my team. We want them talking. We want them helping us think through our strategy, because when we were a team of 3, we've now grown a little bit, but we're only a team of 6. So we don't have enough in-house resources to do all of this for the world's largest company. I would bet that 6 isn't enough to do any of the stuff that you people in this room are tasked with doing every day, let alone at Walmart. So we wanted control of the creative. We also wanted control of the technology. We wanted control of our traditional digital sites, like our corporate site, a blog that we were building at the time. Anything else that we were doing in the tech space, we wanted to have control of that and run it through this agency. And then lastly, media. And this is not the job that my colleagues in media relations do to get earned media for Walmart, but this is the paid side of things. So we wanted to centralize our advertising so that all of our paid spend was going through somebody who had oversight into everything we were trying to do in corporate affairs. We then wanted to leverage the creative into our paid media, and it really helped us recognize a lot of efficiencies. We're about 2 years into that journey right now, and I think that we've got a little bit more room to go there, and there's still some more that we can do, because what you find is, at least if you try to do this on your own, what you'll find in the early stages is when you tell people no, they don't like that. They're used to calling their agency partner, who has to say yes to everything because they're on retainer. So we tried to say no in a lot of cases, and without governance in place and without data to inform the reason we were saying no, we were dead in the water. So if you want to try this at home, have your data to back up the decisions and the recommendations that you're making to your team. So I want to walk you through a couple of case studies when we think about Walmart's reputation, and you go back to those reputational liabilities that I told you about. Number 1, we don't treat our associates well. Number 2, we buy too much from China. And number 3, we put mom and pop out of business. We know that those are the reputational liabilities, and we need to think about a creative way to tell them. You've heard other people here today talk about the power of individuals communicating and how we tell a story through somebody other than the brand, and trying to remove Walmart as being the hero of every story. And I think that's what you'll see when you look at the approach that we tried to take with these. So in this first case, when we think about the treatment of our associates, about a year and a half ago, we made a fairly large announcement that we were going to raise wages at Walmart to $10 and $11 an hour, which resulted in about a $2.7 billion investment in wages, training, and educational opportunities at Walmart. That's a pretty big number for the average person to wrap their arms around, and it's also fairly unbelievable when your number one reputational liability is that you don't treat people well. And for years, you've let your opponents mischaracterize how much the average wage is at your company. So we had to really get in front of this narrative and start to introduce people to the associates that were impacted by these changes. And again, what we were trying to do is match up the reality of our company with the perception that people had of our jobs and the people who work there. So here is, if I can get the mouse to work, Enrique.
This is Enrique. After college, he got a job at Walmart in the tire shop. But he was interested in many different career paths. Which is great because Walmart lets associates explore their options and find the right fit. So Enrique tried out a few different departments, eventually finding a home in the Mission Center, where he fell in love with optometry. He even decided to go back to school to become a licensed optometrist. Now Enrique uses what he learned to help improve the lives of others. That's the ripple effect.
One opportunity can make a big difference.
So we've heard a couple people today talk about content being king, and I want to kind of steal a quote that Gary Vaynerchuk added to that, which is content is king, context is God. So the context here, when we think about this content, is that when Walmart came out and made its announcement, the believability only took us so far. And when we talk about investing in our associates, there's only so much believability. When I talk about those numbers that I led with, that about a third of the country doesn't shop with us and has a reason that they don't shop with us, we're not the most believable and credible spokesperson. We've also done a lot of testing with our creative to understand that when we lead with the associate, if we had started that with live action Enrique, we also see a lot of drop off and lose believability. So there was a little bit of misdirection there. So every time we would do a commercial or a piece of content involving associates, I can tell you what the number one question was, which is, are those real people? So we would always do the offset stuff so that we would have the vignettes to support the piece so that we could prove that these were real people. Because there's a healthy dose of skepticism and cynicism when it comes to our brand. And so when we tested this creative, what we found when we looked at the audiences that we were trying to reach, and I'm gonna get to this in the key takeaways here about knowing your audience and then testing your creative, is that this content had a 15% lift in favorability when people were exposed to this content. So clearly this is one of those areas where we'll double down and make a continued bet in this type of creative with some small tweaks. The other big reputational liability that I told you about was this belief that we buy too much from China. And again, I think that you can go through sort of the historical evolution of Walmart and where we came from and why we've gotten to where we are today. But we did. We started in Arkansas, and the entire left coast of the country and the entire right coast of the country weren't really concerned about what consumers in middle America, how they were getting their products or how much they cost. So roughly 50 years ago, Sam Walt started this company, and then one day everybody woke up and realized all of a sudden we were the biggest retailer in the world. And so we were held to a higher standard, and by the time other people started to pay attention to us, we didn't have a corporate communications team, we didn't have anybody inside of Walmart who was used to having to defend ourselves. And when you don't get into the fight and defend yourselves, you allow other people to characterize you before you've ever gotten a chance to let people know who you are. So this, everything that my team does and everything that we get up and do every day is about trying to reintroduce people to the company that we know we are, but we've just lost control of our own narrative. So in this case, for years and years and years, we let people continue this myth or this narrative that we buy everything from China, when in reality, our own data from our suppliers and from our salespeople is that two-thirds of everything we sell at Walmart is grown or made in the United States. So a couple years ago, we made a commitment that we would invest an additional $250 billion in American-made products, which would then lead to the creation of 1 million new jobs in the United States. And again, huge numbers. These numbers are almost incomprehensible. And what we've seen when we've gone out and test then message penetration, pick up resonance on some of these big announcements is there's no awareness. So we make these big announcements and then we are shocked to find 9%, 10%, 11% awareness in the general population. And it's about how do you then bring the story down to an individual and personal level that people can relate to. So in this series, what we did was we went out to the Pacific Northwest and met with one of our suppliers and tried to bring their story to life. And I think this is the 32nd, sorry, the 32nd version that we did.
I'm 100% made in America kind of guy. I'm really big on keeping every part of our economy here, including the food that we catch. It's great because I want my kids to be able to go out there and fish for albacore tuna just like I did. I plan on being a fisherman for the rest of my life.
So again, tough message to expect there to be a lot of penetration and pull through, but when we put this piece of content out there, and especially when we targeted it to audiences in the Pacific Northwest, people knew who these folks were. They knew these guys. They saw their product inside of Walmart, and it created such a sense of pride and allowed us to connect to people on an individual level. So I think one of the things that I sat there and was somewhat envious of the Denny's presentation was this ability to not take yourself so seriously and to have a lot of fun with your content, which works for some brands and would work if I was really focused on sort of a sales funnel and converting people into sales. And we are a retailer. I'm reminded of that every day. And so like one of my ancillary charges is to drive sales, but at the end of the day, we're trying to impact reputation. And again, it's about knowing your audience. And I think everybody has talked about that today. And for us, our audience is not going to accept sort of slapstick humor or over the top humor. When I talk about things that we've gotten wrong that I hope you'll learn from, it was that. When we did our open call last year, which is an event we have where it's sort of like Shark Tank. We invite entrepreneurs to Walmart to pitch us on their products and we sign deals. We created a series of content called Open for Anything, and they were fake products, and it was really designed to try to stimulate a conversation around a fairly boring event, and it didn't work at all. Our audience sort of rejected it. They weren't looking for the brand to be funny in that space. They wanted a little bit more serious tone to the content. And so while I think that the content that was shown earlier from Denny's is entirely appropriate and right for what they're doing, for us it's not. And so we like to have fun. We actually think this content's fun for us. This is about turning fairly boring corporate messaging into more dynamic stories. And we were all very proud when we saw this piece. So I encourage you, definitely have fun. Understand what fun means for your brand and for your audience. So here are the big takeaways. Here's the aha. Here's what I hope you guys will be sitting there, will take back to your offices and say, well, Walmart's so big, they do a bunch of stuff that I can't do. I think this is applicable to everybody. So I've talked about this over and over and over again. Know your audience. So let's do a little bit of math here, which is hard because I'm a liberal arts major, but I can do this a little bit. So we know that 2/3 of the country shops with us, and so that leaves us with 1/3 who doesn't. And then it's about understanding what drives that behavior amongst the 1/3, right? It wouldn't be very efficient for me to keep talking to the 2/3 who already like me. They come to the store, they buy our stuff. If there's 2/3 of these people in this room who like me, that's great. I'm going to take that right now, and I don't need to really worry about you guys anymore. But the 1/3 who doesn't like me, I got to figure out why you don't like me, and then I got to figure out whether or not you're persuadable. Do you want to even hear what I have to say? Do you want to hear my story? Do you want to learn more about me? Or are you so closed off because of either previous experiences with us, as was just illustrated with the angry celebrity in the airline? You know, there might be a grudge that has been developing for years. There might have been a bad in-store shopping experience. I don't deny any of that. But are you so far gone that you're not coming back? Because it doesn't make any sense for me to spend money on those people either. We tried that. That was another great learning when we did targeted Twitter right into the lion's den. Didn't work at all. I would advise against that. At that moment where you feel like you're going to go stir the pot and you're going to be able to convince a critic, don't do it. So for us, it's about knowing that audience. So I've just taken what is, you know, the U.S. population of 360 million, I guess, something like that, and boiled it down into a number that makes a lot more sense. that's the audience that I worry about every day. So, you know, while you may look at some of my handles and say, oh, you're missing an obvious opportunity to tap into the zeitgeist and be culturally relevant, I'll come back and tell you that's not what's driving my audience. So I feel pretty good every day that my work is grounded in knowing who my audience is. So it's about wanting, knowing who wants to hear from you and who needs to hear from you, because otherwise that content that we talked about that is so important becomes irrelevant if the audience doesn't want to know who you are. So part of that then is finding your true north for storytelling. And again, it gets back to that content is king and context is God. You've got a lot of stuff that I'm sure you want to talk about every day. You've got 90,000 things that you feel are important to your brand and to your job every day you get to the office. Well, the audience, the people you're trying to reach, they've got just as many things that are going on in their life that are important to them. Somewhere in the middle is where that intersection is, and those are the stories that you need to be telling. If you want to be relevant with an audience who's every bit as busy as you are in trying to tell those stories, you got to figure out what you all have in common. And you don't want to be a content polluter. You know, why are you out there adding content into a cycle when every other brand is trying to do the exact same thing that everybody in this room is doing, which is, I need more content, I need more content, I need to be out there connecting with my customers, with my advocates, with my critics. So you got to find that sweet spot where you guys line up. This is a big one. Clearly, everything that I've talked about is about us trying to be as authentic and transparent as we possibly can. A lot of this we've started to, I think, turn the corner on, and you'll see this in my last slide, by getting our CEO onto social. And I was having a meeting earlier today with AT&T, and I admit that my thinking has evolved, I guess is the politically correct way of saying I changed my mind, or somebody finally illustrated to me that I was wrong. I might be standing here a year from now and admit to being on Snapchat, but for now I'm that crazy old guy standing on the side of the road denying that it's happening. No, there's no such thing as Snapchat. I don't know what it is. I'm not on it. We're not on it. Again, if you think about my audience and what we're trying to accomplish, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us. Our marketing team is on Snapchat, but we're not. I, for a long time, didn't think that our CEO had any business being on social. I knew that Doug was aware of it. I knew that he was paying attention to it. I knew that he knew what our associates were saying on social. I knew he knew what our customers were saying on social. But why he needed to be on there with his own handle, creating content, people couldn't convince me. I didn't think it was the CEO of the world's largest company's job to be on social media. We've changed, and you'll see that at the end here. And I've gotten, and my team's gotten, way too much credit over the last year for the advancements that we've made in social media as a company. And all of it is due to having a dynamic CEO. So while I would encourage you to look at this, I would also caution you against putting somebody on social media whose personality doesn't fit. We heard that from Laura. We heard that time and time again today. Don't force people into a box that isn't consistent with their personality, number one. And number two, know where your audience is. So depending on those people you're trying to reach, it will dictate what channels you're on. So for us, when we look at our associates, again, this group of people who work for Walmart, who need to continually hear good things about the company in order to stay and grow in their careers, we knew that they were on Facebook in big numbers, and we knew that they were on Instagram. So two really good places for our CEO to go, because he wanted to connect with associates in a place outside of the four walls and then the digital walls of Walmart, inside the firewall. So that's why he chose Facebook and Instagram. For a lot of our other leaders, it's been LinkedIn, because we want to have provide thought leadership in a lot of different spaces. And for some of our other execs, it makes no sense whatsoever to be on social. Again, we are having this conversation with AT&T this morning. And when you think about the telecom industry, there's really four companies: AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, and T-Mobile. And if you think about two of those companies, they have very aggressive CEOs on social media. I have no idea whether it's doing Sprint and T-Mobile any good at all. But that's one of the factors that's going into AT&T's thinking about their CEO and being on social and what they would suddenly expose him to if he were out there. And so I think there's a lot of thinking that goes into it. But there's nothing for us that has been more authentic and transparent than having our CEO on Facebook and Instagram. And I'll show you at the end what that looks like and how he takes questions from customers and associates and how he deals with them. So I heard this come up earlier as well. a tip for all of you people who ever speak at a conference and go last, pay attention to the presentation so that you're not repeating what they said, but all of this is repeating what has been said before me. Get to know your SMEs. So our subject matter experts, again, I have a team of six, and I'm responsible for creating content and publishing content to all of our digital channels. I couldn't do that without knowing our in-house and our out-of-house subject matter experts who can provide expertise. So I wasn't kidding when I said we did a piece on deep fried Twinkies. Our colleagues in marketing for some reason passed, although that seems like a really good opportunity for the people at Denny's to make some deep fried Twinkies jokes. So we ended up doing a blog on our piece that was much more about customer innovation, for as innovative as Twinkies are. But we talked to Hostess and we really presented that story from a supplier point of view and from a customer innovation point of view. So finding out who our SMEs are, that gives us the license to operate in places that are fairly not intuitive. This is probably one that we could spend an entire day on. I think that a lot of this is based on sort of personal politics and your belief in organic versus paid. I guess I'm the optimist when it comes to this area, that I still believe that there is the ability to capture attention organically. But I realize that more and more it's becoming a pay-for-play environment. So I think this should just go into your thinking when you are trying to figure out your content mix and then your amplification process. I have maintained for a couple years now with my team that we do not have a content creation problem, we have a content distribution problem. If anybody knows how to solve that, you can come find me afterwards, but that is the nut that we're trying to crack, which is how do I continue to get this content out to the audiences that I need to get it to in a very, very competitive environment out there where every other brand is trying to reach the same people with very similar messaging. Localize your announcements. So you saw this in the two stories that I showed you earlier. What we were trying to do with these big announcements, and when you're Walmart, one of the things that I absolutely love about working for this company is that we actually do have the ability to change the world for good. When Walmart moves, we can move an entire industry, we can move the entire world. When we moved our wages, not surprisingly, other retailers moved with us. When we change things in our supply chain and try to become more sustainable, and we put a focus on sort of corporate responsibility, we see others follow us. That is a great place to be. When we tell those stories, though, they have really no impact on the individual unless we're able to localize it to them. So when we talk about wage increases, going to a market like Dallas and telling them what associates in Dallas are now going to make, suddenly the message resonates. And so to whatever ability you have to take your message and localize it to your audiences to have a bigger impact, I would highly encourage you to do that. Considering that, I just went over to have a sidebar conversation with Laura about our lawyers at Walmart. It's sort of ironic that I would say this, but you have to love your lawyers. When I got into the position that I was in several years ago, we spent way too much time fighting with our lawyers. Everything was a fight. Everything that we wanted to say was a fight. And eventually, and at the time, my big boss, my EVP, said, well, just go get a different lawyer. That wasn't really good advice for somebody as smart as my EVP was, because what it did was everything that you do in your job, a lot of it is probably based on your expertise, but then like 90% of it is based on relationships. And if you don't have relationships at work or in your personal life, then I would be challenged to believe that you're good at what you do. This was all based on relationships. Like once we were able to establish trust with the lawyers, we now start all of our conversations from a place of help me get to yes. We've all decided that this is in the best interest of the company, so let's figure out how to get to yes. But this took a while, and it's painful. So then finally, I've talked about this quite in depth, but I do want to show you what Doug did on Facebook. We used Facebook Live back in June. If you follow our company at all, you'll know that we have a rather infamous event every June, our annual shareholders meeting. If you pay any attention to Warren Buffett, you know that the shareholders meeting at Berkshire Hathaway is like 9 hours, and it's all financial investors, and he tells everybody what stocks he's going to buy. We have Katy Perry like come perform, and James Corden was the host this year, so it's more like a party, rock concert, spiritual revival, business meeting. We used to start it on Friday morning at 7 in the morning. We've actually backed things up a little bit at Walmart, so we start at 8 a.m., but it's crazy. I mean, there's 16,000 people in the house. So when Laura talks about, you know, harnessing the power of 20,000 people, that's what we try to do, and we really wanted Doug to be able to connect with associates. Again, we have 4,500 stores in the United States. We have 1.2 million associates. We can't fit them into an arena in Arkansas, but Doug is very much about connecting with our associates on an individual level. Shameless plug, if you want to follow him on Facebook or Instagram, it's Doug McMillan. He's in Denver right now for our holiday meeting, and you'll see that he was touring stores earlier today, took pictures with associates and posted them with a shout out. So to Laura, acknowledging your associates or your employees from your CEO, it doesn't get any better than that, and they know that he's really out there for them. So let me show you what Doug did.
We're here if you would, please. I want to say hello to every Walmart associate that's joining from around the world. I want to tell you we're here in Fayetteville, Arkansas at our shareholders meeting, and we wish that you were all here with us, but we're glad that you've joined virtually. I've got some of your fellow associates here that want to say hello. Turn that camera towards them. I've been coming to shareholders meetings for a long, long time. My first one was when I was 16 years old, and I have been dreaming about what it would be like to get all of our associates into one place at one time. But somebody's got to be in the stores taking care of customers and clubs, so we'll try to do it virtually. And now that you're all here, we want to tell you a few things. First of all, we want to say thank you. We care about you. We appreciate the job that you're doing. And then I want you to know that this group that's been here supporting you this week has done a great job representing you. They're from all over the world, and they brought their feedback and their ideas and represented you really well. You guys have done a great job. Now, when you go back to your distribution centers or your stores or your clubs around the world, we want you to go back into those buildings and tell your fellow associates about our purpose. We save people money so they can... Yes, we do. That's our purpose. But we also want to make every day easier for busy families like yours and like these families. So I want to ask each one of you that are watching or here in person to do one thing when you go back. And it would be to engage with your customers. They are the reason that we have a job. Say hello, have a conversation with them, ask them how their day is, walk with them to the merchandise they're looking for, and then when you say goodbye, tell them thank you. Thank you for your business. When they come back, because you made them feel special, we'll be able to keep this thing going and growing this business. Can I count on you to do that? Thank you. I really believe that we live in some hectic times. Certainly my life can get hectic, and I'm sure that yours can too. But what I believe is you can make a difference in their lives. I believe we can make a difference, and I would ask you to go do it. Thank you.
That was a pretty frightening moment to cut away from our show and go to Facebook Live. There were lots of EMTs on hand. Had that not gone right, you know, because we were using their API and trying to cut into our feed. Sorry, that was the last slide, I believe. Yeah, 1.2 million views of that video with Doug, 8,000 comments. We were not prepared at all for the commenting. So if you have not done Facebook Live yet and you work for a company like Walmart, expect a lot of feedback. If you don't work for a company like Walmart, maybe you'll get a little less feedback, but we were not the least bit prepared for the number of comments that we had. And I think that depending on your size and scale and what you're trying to do when you think about Facebook Live, trying to moderate and reply to comments in real time may not be the best thing to do. We had to take a lot of it offline and do it later. So, you know, again, to sum up, I think Doug, when he's talking about the Walmart business and what he wanted everybody in Fayetteville to do, applies to everybody in this room. It's about engaging. It's about making people feel important on an individual level, and it's about earning trust and earning people's repeat business. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions that you may have about me or Walmart or anything that I had to say. Yes, ma'am.
You talked about, so I work too for a very highly regulated and very conservative, extremely conservative company, and with a very fledgling social program. So immature, we're going to have a lot of learnings too. You have learnings like not going to the lion's den, maybe using Denny's type of humor as doesn't work for your company, and in this, you know, all of a sudden having 8,000 comments and not necessarily being prepared for it. As you're working through this, how are you managing these learnings up and not getting either more constrained by your executives and still being given permission to continue to move forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and I've, no matter what business I've been in, and I moved to Arkansas from the Washington, D.C. area, grew up doing politics, trade associations, that sort of stuff. And the million-dollar question 10 or 15 years ago was, how do you get CEO buy-in? How do you get executive-level support for your programs? I haven't had that problem at Walmart. And everything that we are doing today is a result of my EVP being there with us step by step, and he's the one who actually challenged us to go faster with regards to our digital team. he asked me to bring him in what he was advertising, or what he referred to as the Cadillac plan for digital. Sorry. And like I said, I had a team of three, and I took him an org chart that then went from 3 to 19. That didn't go over very well, so we sort of backed that out and said, well, what would that look like if we you know, phase that in over 3 years? So all of the challenges, some of the experiences that we had in the early stages with Doug on Instagram, because we had a couple of failings early on, but we had Doug's involvement. You know, we were sitting in Doug's office, we talked to him about the content that he was gonna do. He runs that account himself with some help from us. And then my executive vice president has, you know, from day one, looked at me and asked me to raise the digital acumen of our team. I still don't know what that means, and I don't know how to measure it to prove that I did it. If it's not going to be in people's evals every year, I'm not exactly sure how to hold people accountable for that. But at the end of the day, I don't have to do a lot of managing up. I have a little bit of managing up to do right now. We have a new vice president of corporate communications who came to us from the Wall Street Journal, where he was, you know, a reporter for 20 years. And so most of Greg's thinking is sort of in the newsroom, and there's a little bit of analog digital there. It's not contentious at all. It's completely healthy, but there is some learning, and it's just about him having trust that I know what I'm talking about in digital, which I think I do. The rest of the time I fake it. But I'm in an ideal situation, I really am, that I've got all this buy-in from our leaders, and our leaders are now coming to us and asking, how do I get on social? I saw what Doug did. Build me a presence. Tell me what to do. I don't know what I would do if I was in an organization in 2016 where I was still arguing with leaders about the necessity to do digital. And I just sort of reject this notion out of hand that social is a different world, that I don't need to be on social, I don't need to listen to social, it's not representative of the rest of the world. Again, to go to the Gabby Douglas instance, there are examples where social is not at all representative of the real world, but like, that's where you should be getting intelligence, and that's where you should be spending a lot of your time. So I don't think I answered your question at all, but I'm not exactly sure what the answer is for managing up with people who are still trying to deny that the world's moved from analog to digital and social.